This is Damien O'Doherty with the Center Maryland Podcast Experience. We have been covering some local issues across the state of Maryland throughout this podcast experience. Today, we're going to look into Frederick County, Maryland, where a May 19th headline from the Frederick County News Post read, "Sugarloaf residents at odds over plan to preserve their land." A number of people who live on or near Sugarloaf Mountain disagreed about a draft plan to preserve land surrounding the mountain during a Frederick County Planning Commission meeting there at the end of May. As we go into, as we are in the midst of June here, we know the Frederick County Planning Board is considering the first map, really, a mini map of their livable Frederick master plan. And that's what brought this news item to issue in Frederick County. We're very excited to have three guests talk to us about livable Frederick, what that means for the people of Frederick County, and how these first couple plans coming out of the county, namely this first plan, which was a pandemic-produced plan in the last couple years, you know, how that's been met with opposition, why it's been met with opposition. And we've even learned that the landowners of Sugarloaf Mountain object to this plan. So here with us today are three very special guests. We have Rick Weldon, who is the president and CEO of the Chamber of Commerce in Frederick County, and so many people in this audience, the Annapolis Fabulous 5000 of Maryland politics. They know Rick well for being a twice elected delegate to the Frederick and Washington County delegations in the Maryland General Assembly. He also served as a county commissioner, has a ton of background with municipal administration. He is joined by Danielle Adams. Danny is a longtime family builder and now executive director of the Frederick County Building Industry Association. I think if anybody knows Danny, they know she's a builder of not just organizations, but of really long lasting relationships. She's a strong advocate for the building industry's interest out there in Frederick County, and was a really welcome voice on the Livable Frederick master plan experience. Finally, I want to introduce to you a good friend of the realtor community, and he is the association executive for the Frederick County Association of Realtors. His name is Hugh Gordon. Hugh was a longtime master in the mortgage banking industry before becoming the leader of really the guardians of Frederick County's quality of life. Of course, that's the FCAR, the Frederick County Association of Realtors. So I'd like to welcome all three of you, Danny, Hugh, and Rick, to the Center Maryland podcast. Rick, tell me, what is going on in Frederick County?
Well, first, let me say how fun it is to be on this side of the mic, Damien. I've been as long a listener of the Lobby podcast as you've been putting it out there. So I'll self-admit that I still haven't excised my Severn River fever. So I still follow very closely all the great things that are happening in Maryland and deeply appreciate you for communicating these issues so effectively. In a nutshell, what we're faced with is a dichotomy between the political promise of the livable Frederick Master Plan and the on-the-ground reality of the first plan that's gone through this multi-year process. So I'll just do a real quick backgrounder. When she ran for county executive, my friend Jan Gardner, we served together on the Board of Commissioners. And when I was chair of the delegation, she was president of the Board of County Commissioners. So we have a long 25-year connection and relationship. And Jan had grown tired of the cyclical swing between no growth and pro-growth that we saw every 4 or 8 years throughout Frederick's history. And I know this isn't news, right? This isn't news to Harford County. This isn't news to counties on the Eastern Shore in Southern Maryland or Western Maryland or around Baltimore. This is what happens. The ideological swing between do we grow and how do we grow, or do we restrict growth and try to return to 1958? And so Jan was tired of that, politically tired, operationally tired. So she proposed a new way, a more inclusive, a more holistic, a more balanced way to approach questions of residential and commercial growth in our county. And she did that through something called the Livable Frederick Master Plan, which is a very high level document that describes her vision for how to grow in the most intelligent way. That was adopted, I guess, about 5 years ago, maybe 6 years ago. And the first plan that we're seeing, the Sugarloaf Treasured Areas Plan, doesn't really reflect that holistic and inclusive and balanced approach. It actually reflects a more ideologically oriented opinion toward no growth in Southern Frederick County. And that affects residential zoning on farms that have been long held within families, commercial land that could be developed along the Maryland ADI 270 corridor, and most significantly, the lands around Sugarloaf Mountain, the land holdings of the Stronghold Corporation, which is a land conservation and preservation nonprofit located on Sugarloaf Mountain and around the base of Sugarloaf Mountain. So that's why we find ourselves in conflict. My two incredible colleagues that are on the podcast with me today and I feel like, and our members feel that if we could reorient this debate back to the promise of the original adoption of the master plan and reflect those principles in this Sugarloaf Treasured Area Plan, then we think that would be the impetus to carry those forward in terms of the next several small area plans that are going to come through this process. And we think it's a really timely issue and a really critical issue that we weigh in.
So Danny, you are stepping into this conversation as a leader of one of the more influential voices in public affairs in Frederick County and Maryland with the builders. My experience is people have trouble understanding why, if something's not good for the builders, it may not be good for them. Also, they tend to get and have gotten caught up in this back and forth between growthers and non-growthers, YIMBYs and NIMBYs. You're stepping into this thing saying, hey, we had it right with the Frederick County's Livable Frederick Master Plan. We're going to have an organization dedicated to the values that were presented in here. But you're saying right out of the gate, we love this policy that we all agreed to and all got behind and all hoped for. But now in its first iteration, a plan that has come out of the county's planning office during the pandemic experience. Can you talk a little bit about how this policy impacts regular folks in Frederick County?
Absolutely. And let me first say, Damian, big fan. And just to kind of share a little bit more, Rick really gave a strong overview about kind of where we're coming from as well. But if we do look at the preparation prior to Jan coming into office, you had such pendulum swings with how land use was going to be determined in this county. So it was rather schizophrenic. You would have leadership that was very pro-growth, and then you would have it shut down. And as anybody looks at an economy for residents, for business owners, you have that schizophrenia happening. You end up having your economy as a whole impacted, because we're not talking just residential and commercial. We're talking about attracting businesses to come to this county. So having said that, what's really critical for us is this plan is very forward thinking. It's not for, you know, the 4 years that a politician's in their role. It is taking a look at all of the contentious nature that we had prior to the Livable Frederick Master Plan being adopted. And they had voices from the public, from associations, organizations, nonprofits, certainly all types of leadership in the county come together over 200 meetings and workshops were held, over 15,000 comments from the public. They took the time to intentionally include these things, break it down, and come to something we could all agree on.
Danny, so before the pandemic,
yes,
Frederick County planning staff, planning board, council, executive, business community, nonprofits, farmers, they all got together, did all these hundreds of meetings committing yes. to livable Frederick. But then many key concerns or planning elements were left to future sort of smaller mini map plans that would come out, right? And so that's yes. where we are now. So you guys feel a little bit, to me, it sounds like you had full buy-in in the original livable Frederick plan. And I bet that buy-in for you was not easy to get the business community on board for a lot of growth restrictions and limitations.
No, we were, yeah, exactly. We were not in favor of looking at all the compromises, but we were willing to say, okay, we got it. We certainly want, we live here, we play here, we work here, our children go to school here. We understand we need a lens in which to approach things so that all parties, again, could be heard. So you're right, prior to pandemic, that was the foundation.
So then what happened? So you're telling me you had this huge consensus on a countywide plan that was totally inclusive. And now the first plan that comes out is where? Is it the southwestern portion of the county surrounding Sugarloaf? And the planning staff has made recommendations that will sort of broad swath limit the way people that currently own those homes and farms and businesses can utilize the land that they have now. Is that the chief concern?
Yes, it's a little bit of bait and switch. So when you take a look at this is the first plan, and timing is everything, because this is the first of what could be a total of 10 plans. So we already see if this is the way that through the planning and the staff and then what comes before the county council members, which I might add, this is the same council members that were part of the adoption in September of 2019 of the master plan. So, okay, here's our first small area plan. If this is what's going to happen with this one, and the next one, by the way, is already in the pipeline, the South Frederick Corridor, we could have another bait and switch. And the bait and switch results in no growth. It's no growth. And it goes back to prior to all of the efforts, all of the input that was given, it is in vain. And so we want to make sure that we stay very focused on how this first area plan is going to be going through the entire process through the commission. This coming Wednesday, it's going to have its last look at the planning commission and then on to the county council. So we're really hoping that the county council, again, the same people who were involved in the master plan adoption, will use that as the lens to look at this entire process. Look at all the maps that were included, and then understand from economic development, what we're working so hard, we're championing those efforts, that will be shut down if this gets adopted.
Rick, you've heard from two of your colleagues here. As I said earlier, you've been a remarkable representative of not just the realtor and real estate community, but also sort of the, like I said earlier, the guardians of quality, the quality of life in Frederick County. I'd just love to hear your take on what the ideas that Rick and Danny introduced in light of this very controversial Sugarloaf Mountain plan that earned, I think, close to 30 pieces of opposition in their recent planning board hearing. Talk to me about your views on this.
Thanks, Damian. You know, I think the plan has us all scratching our heads a little bit. When you talk with the owners over there of properties, most of the property owners, it's family property that have been held for generations. And most of them, you know, have no desire to see any development in the immediate future on their property. They want to continue to do what they've been doing with it. Which, you know, when you take that into account and the fact that you've got Sugarloaf, the recreational area, which is obviously not going to be, for the most part, not be developed, you kind of wonder what the motivation is here. There was a swath along 270 that I think that was designated for commercial. It's really important. It was an economic corridor that probably is important to the widening of 270 and the state's decision to come up into this area and widen 270. So,
yeah, let me jump in there for a second. So Jan Gardner is down in Annapolis all session with the Maryland Association of Counties, your county executive. She's begging for more transportation funding. Then we have a governor of the state of Maryland who, if he is known for any policy achievement at all in my side of the fence, the Democratic side, it would be transportation, highways, corridors of opportunity. He wants a vibrant master plan experience out there because he and the president of the United States have invested all of this, and the taxpayers of Maryland invested all this money in infrastructure. And what I've heard from you and from some advocates is in the livable Frederick master plan, the consensus document, there was a broad consensus about keeping these corridor opportunities for tech and bioscience and all of that along the 270 corridor, in line with the county executive's demands, in line with the president's demands for infrastructure, in line with the Republican governor's demands for infrastructure. It seems like everybody's on board for more infrastructure in Frederick County. And then the first plan that you all come out says, hey, I know we had a consensus here in for 270, but as far as this mini map or smaller plan, it's nowhere to be mentioned. Does that got to be a little unnerving?
It is, and Rick probably can address that a little bit better. But again, it's part of why we're all scratching our heads, because the plan demonstrates that it's being pushed by some very special interests as opposed to the interests of the entire county.
Hugh, one of the amazing things that you all showed me is actually you can go to the website or you can Google Livable Frederick. And you can see the Livable Frederick Coalition website, and it lists the members. It is a bit of a credit to Jan and everybody who came together on the Livable Frederick plan, because it seems like the folks that are opposed to this mini map, this sort of overreach, this inconsistent overreach on Sugarloaf, are not developers, not just sort of business interests, but you got real regular people that have been there forever. You got the McIntosh family that's been there forever. You got small businesses like Parker Automotive. You've got big statewide coalitions like the Suburban Maryland Transportation Alliance. You got the Woodsboro Bank. You've got Jacqueline Bryant. You know, you've got a lot of real people that have been a part of this community for so long. And one of the most vexing is that Stronghold, the owner of Sugarloaf Mountain, the guardian of Sugarloaf Mountain for 5-6 decades, is against this small map, mini map plan to quote unquote protect Sugarloaf. So can somebody make sense of that to me? Because you would think if the goal of the local community was to preserve Sugarloaf, they would do everything they could to give the tools to the people that own the property, the nonprofit to own the property. Instead, they seem to be ignoring the pleas of these people through 2 years of the pandemic and then sort of leaving them off to the side, even though they own the property. I'm having trouble. I sound a little bit like my friend Nestor Aparicio here, but I'm having a little trouble understanding that disconnect. This is the Sugarloaf Mountain plan, but the owners of Sugarloaf Mountain, a nonprofit whose role is to protect it, says this plan ain't doing it for us. And to me, that's very vexing in addition to the 270 issues.
Well, that's why I don't think it's a heavy lift to get a better outcome here. Because I think when anybody looks at this objectively, a return to the principles that Jan and her team outlined several years ago and reflected in this in the zoning maps that accompany this small area plan, I don't think it's a long distance to get there or a heavy lift to get there. I frankly think if we can get members of the county council or less likely, but members of the County Planning Commission on board with this idea that let's just take a breath here, take a step back. Let's go back to the original principles of the Livable Frederick Plan and ensure that we have applied those when it comes to these zoning maps. I think most rational thinking people when faced with that, Damian, tend to say, yeah, okay, I can see that. And again, the timing criticality is, this is just the first of many, as Danny said, there are 9 or 10 more area plans to come about. We've got to get it right this time. And we don't want to do that with accusations and political threats. I think it's really just a simple, pure, clean message of common sense. Let's just return to the principles of the Livable Frederick Plan. Let's ensure they're applied in the Sugarloaf Treasured Areas Small Area Plan. And I think we're there. And then we can encourage carrying those same principles forward to all the other planning regions in Frederick County. Look, I like to think we could set an example for the state if we get this right, which is why it's so important to Hugh, Danny, and I.
Yeah, I echo that as well. And I would say this, because of the process that worked so well to bring this master plan together, it took 4 years for that work to come to fruition. That was supposed to be the way in which we approached the planning when these small areas came across their desk. And I think if we communicate better, we could have the best possible input. And, you know, a big part of this as well, you know, Rick, to your point, the rest of the state is paying attention. Maryland Department of Commerce even issued a letter last month because it was required for them to give some input. And I'll just touch on one of their strategic goals for our state is to expand targeted industry clusters. We all know that I-270 corridor, you having somebody like Kite Pharma here, who's an international company, they are attracted here. And that is a whole campaign for our Office of Economic Development to bring those businesses here and to be attracting them. So they expanded that goal to us and to share that also. They shared that with the Planning Commission. So I think the more we try to put that process in place and replicate that when we go through these small area plans, we're not going to have any type of silent voices or unintended consequences, I guess is a better way of saying it. We won't have any unintended consequences that we didn't plan for in some way.
You, what do you think?
Well, yeah, Damian, I agree. And it's all about communication. You know, when a realtor sells a piece of property, or if they were to sell a piece of property in that particular regional plan, there is all kinds of disclosures that are required. And if we don't require them, if we don't disclose properly, it can create, you know, some real legal problems for us. All we're asking the county to do is provide the same disclosure to the property owners there so that they know that whatever's being proposed and how that they know how it's going to affect their property and the value of their property. So I agree with Rick. It's a matter of stepping back and really following, you know, a logical path to move forward. And so far, you know, we're not seeing that happen. And that's all we're asking for.
One of the things I find so challenging about this is, you know, I'm coming at it from an old Baltimore County guy, right? So I worked for Baltimore County Executive Jim Smith, big paragon of integrity when it came to land use planning, always talked about the integrity of the process. You know, I can't imagine, you know, Jim Smith or the Howard County executive, you know, coming out of their consensus livable county plan, going now into one of these smaller plans and then picking the first one to be the first area to be so different than the rest of the county. And one of the residents of the area pointed this out to me. It was a county document actually that showed it, just to give listeners an example of what we're talking about. So in Baltimore County, it would be kind of like doing a planning process countywide and then picking the first place to be the richest, whitest, most affluent area of the county in Baltimore County, Green Spring area, or in Howard County, maybe it's River Hill or one of those kind of areas. What you have here in Frederick County is a county comprised of 94,000 households, That's what the big livable Frederick plan spoke to. And then this plan is only about 830 households. So it's a pretty small microcosm of the whole county. And then when you look deeper, it's really not a microcosm of the county at all. The Frederick County's population is close to 75% white. Well, here it's hovering around 91% white in this smaller rural planning district. 44% of county residents earn about $100,000 or more. Here in this area, almost 60% earn $100,000 or more. So you're talking about richer, wider folks. And then the median age in Frederick County, 39, people that probably don't want to be in that old 1980s style back and forth schizophrenia you talked about, Danny, about growth, not growth. They don't want to be there. They're 39. They want to move into the future. Well, here, the median age in the Sugarloaf area is 50. So older, whiter, more affluent, more exclusive. What's the thinking behind going to this area versus, say, a jurisdiction that a part of this county that is more representative of the county countywide? Or I'd love to hear your take on that, all three of you.
This is just my speculation, but I think it's a confluence of a couple things: core political support and history. So if you look at this region that we're talking about, I'd call it the Urbana region, Urbana area. From the 1958 comp plan until today, this Urbana area has always been targeted for substantial residential and commercial growth. It was the one area outside of our municipalities, particularly our larger municipalities, that was always intended to carry a substantial component of our future growth. There are a lot of people that live down there who live on the west side I-270 who love the bucolic, natural aspects of life in southwestern Frederick County. That Sugarloaf Vista is the prime, short of north on Route 15, when you look out to the Frederick watershed, it's one of the most significant areas of dense tree canopy and natural environment. A lot of Fredericktonians love to drive down there and hike up Sugarloaf Mountain, despite the fact it's private property owned by the Stronghold Corporation. But the folks that are there, they don't really want that to change. And in their mind, that means restrict the opportunities for any kind of growth beyond what's already there. Go back to the pre-1958 vision for southwestern Frederick County. Those people are vocal and they're politically organized. And so I think that was part of the pressure that pushed this more forward. And then I think it's this concept that we've already had enough, right? With the villages of Urbana, large, planned unit development with a lot of commercial growth down there, the big biopharmas that have come in, the Social Security data center. I think-
But wait, Rick, people that represent the county are going to state officials. They're going to federal officials, they're going to governor, they're going to the media, and they're saying Frederick County wants more infrastructure. Frederick County is going to be a boom for bioscience. It's going to be a boom for the tech, this whole new 270 tech corridor and bio corridor is set to explode. And then you're having a collection of people that are trying to drive policy that pushes all of those things away.
Well, not all of them, Damian.
Okay.
At least one member, high profile member of our county council, who's now running for county exec, participated in a bit of a scheme with the Washakag Transportation Planning Board to kill the 270 expansion right through this corridor, and has been a vocal opponent of any form of residential and commercial development down there. So yeah, I don't think it's as clear as County Executive Gardner being out there pushing for enhanced transportation. A member of her party and the county council has been pursuing a message that is diametrically opposed from a policy standpoint.
Hugh, this is all coming at us as an election is on the horizon out there in Frederick County, as Rick just alluded to, a competitive primary election and then a competitive general election as it is out in Frederick County. How does this whole conversation come to be something that's talked about on the elite, you know, sort of the weeks leading up to the election? It seems like, look, if I was in the county executive staff, I'd be looking at my planning director, I'd be looking at my planning commission and saying, why are we having this conversation now? And why does it sound so different than our livable Frederick conversation?
Well, I agree. I think this is, you know, has a lot of potential to be a significant issue in the election. Our current county executive is not running for reelection. I'm not sure that, she may not feel that this regional plan might be best left to the next administration to figure out. But certainly, you know, you have players that are currently part of the current county council that are running for county executive. And I think it could very well, it could very well play to their constituencies in terms of how they'd like to see this plan be resolved. It amazes me, Damian. I hope you don't mind me maybe taking a little different track here.
Sure, but I'd love you to take a different.
You did ask, you know, why the Sugarloaf plan initially, and you know that's another factor that I think makes me scratch my head a little bit more, because I think, and I don't know if there was a designated process for the 10 plans to go through in sequence. But I do know from a political standpoint, it would seem to me that you would want to go to one of the other areas first that might be less controversial, especially as it leads up to an election year, to try to get that through the process initially and put something like this, especially if you're going to have some of the special interests that have come to be, I think, a significant influence on where this is heading. The logic of it escapes me. I think that this might have been a plan that was best left somewhere down the road to handle. And maybe it is just an indication that those that are pushing for less development in this particular area may be doing the same as we go through into the next regional plan and the ones that follow.
And we wonder what that would be called. Danny, talk to me about your thoughts on Hugh's point.
Yeah. And I'd like to, you know, again, echo Rick and Hugh on a couple points. So we're in election year. Everybody, you know, whether it's us on this podcast or the actual candidates, you don't let things go to waste. You actually try to maximize your opportunity, but it really shows a number of things. So we have two current seated council members running for county executive. One has already made up their mind and has already talked about going ahead and adopting this. That's inappropriate. It hasn't even come before them for a vote, but they've already voted. The other one talks about having intellectual curiosity, listening to what the public comments are, listening to the Planning Commission's recommendation. Planning Commission hasn't even finished putting, you know, their ink on it. So it kind of already gives you a sense of what Hugh had alluded to. There is something at play as to what was in the pipeline first. A little bit of speculation, right? But if we look at real time things that are going in concert with this small area plan, we're dealing with APFO legislation that will shut growth down. We're dealing with looking at other components with form-based code. So all these things are kind of happening in real time. And if we take our foot off the gas pedal now, it's going to be really tough for that next group of county council members and county executive to be able to go forward and look at the next couple decades of how we grow in this community. They'll have to do a little bit of cleanup. And I'll be honest with you, if we're allowed to have the indulgence of speculating, kicking the can down the road and tying things up for a period of time is also called shutting down growth. So I would just go to say that if things get approved and you try to undo them, that's a process. that requires a lot of time and effort. And I would hate to see that that would be any part of these efforts, but that's what could possibly happen in a worst case scenario is the cleanup for the next group of legislators.
Rick, what do you say?
So what we're doing, Damien, is we're building this coalition and we're reaching across all of our spheres of influence to connect regular Fredericktonians. You know, in my case, it's business owners and nonprofits. In Hugh's case, it's the extended realtor family, which is gigantic in Frederick County. And with Danny, it's the builders and all of their affiliates. Because you think builders, and we're not talking about multi-millionaire residential developers, we're talking about tradespeople and, you know, the folks that live next door to you. So we're working really hard and we're appreciative of this opportunity to communicate with as many different interests in Frederick County as we can. Again, we're not making, you know, overt or covert political threats. We're really just saying, look, let's take a pause here. Let's go back to the original principles. Let's ensure that they're applied on the Sugarloaf plan and then applied on the South Frederick area plan and all of the subsequent planning documents that are gonna follow. I think this is a win-win across the spectrum. Frederick County will continue to be an incredible engine of economic opportunity. If not leading the state, you know, in close second by the hair on our chinny chin chins to continue that that fire burning in that furnace of job creation and of technology creation. I'm convinced, Damien, that at some point a cure for a cancer is going to emerge from all this predicate work we've done to build these life sciences and biopharmas here in Frederick County. So we just want to expand this message across that spectrum, speak to as many people as we can, do so honestly and transparently, and hope for a better outcome for all of us, our kids and our grandkids.
One thing we learned in Annapolis is not to follow Rick Weldon for the reasons we just heard. But Danny and you've been pretty bulletproof today. I'd love to give you an opportunity to close out if you'd like.
Well, Rick, I you say it best. I have just one last thing to leave with. We've got to get it right this first time. Allow especially Jan to leave a beautiful legacy piece to the hard work that she led for not just the 4 years that this was going through the process, but the 8 years of leading up to today. So we need to get it right.
Yeah. And Damien, in closing, I would just say, you know, as it stands right now, you know, my realtor family, the realtors in the community probably wouldn't be able to sell a property over there right now because I'm not sure that they would be able to provide the necessary disclosure that's necessary, that would be required for buyer and seller. So I agree with Rick and Danny. It's just really important that we get this right, that we slow down the process. We make sure there's proper disclosure. And, you know, we're all just looking to, we don't want this to be adversarial. We're all just looking to try to build a better Frederick County.
Well, you heard it from three of the biggest names in Frederick County. Hugh, Danny, Rick, thank you for joining us. They've been loud and clear about the Sugarloaf treasured landscape plan. They say it's inconsistent with livable Frederick. They say it's overregulated, that it's inequitable and environmentally misguided. So check them out on livablefrederickcoalition.com to learn more. They've got all of the materials you would hope the government would be providing to educate people about this important issue. And then I would just say two things as a native Marylander. One, that Sugarloaf landscape is important. We view it, we as Marylanders, I think, even if we're from Hokie Howard County or something like that, we view Sugarloaf as something very meaningful to us and a part of our state identity. But I also want to say that I'm not sure the people in Frederick County are giving themselves enough credit for the incredible work they've done over the years to preserve that landscape. I encourage you to go out there and drive through it and tell me what you think. It's incredibly well protected. And the Webster family, who's been at the center of Stronghold, the nonprofit that's overlooked and overseen the mountain for the last six decades has done a pretty remarkable job. The government says so. The governor says so. So it'll be interesting to see how all this plays out. My last point is, as a former staff person, you know, to a county executive or to a county council person, what you all did with Livable Frederick is a masterpiece. It's a piece of planning that people around the country are going to look at. And it's a piece of planning that you are attracting businesses and residents with. So, you know, don't throw that baby out with the bathwater. If you're staff, you know, think about how you can make sure you can get this conversation out of the political space, like Rick and Danny and Hugh talked about, and get it back into that policy conversation. Give yourself a pandemic pass for not getting all these people on board. Just go back to the drawing board, man. That's what staff does. So that's my advice as a former county staff person in a similar sort of county. And again, just want to thank Hugh, Rick, and Danny for all of their public engagement, and look forward to y'all connecting them more online with the Livable Frederick Coalition. Thanks so much for joining us on Center Maryland. Where am I going to drink some local beer, Frederick County? Where is that? What's the? Pong Jamron, he used to own a sushi place in...
No Pong. I know.
No Pong? Okay, yeah. Great. So he used to run a sushi place that my daughter and I would walk to. And she, this has a very positive ending. She had childhood leukemia. And Pong was always sort of her favorite chef. So lo and behold, we didn't know this, but they gas you up with all these steroids before they do certain procedures when we have leukemia. And so all the kids in the middle of the night, you'll start hearing them like yell out from their room because they're so hungry and they're trying to get something to eat because the steroids have them all jacked up. So my daughter is yelling out, Pong, sushi, sushi, Pong. And I kid you not, Pong gave us the most amazing sushi that the doctors would all like look over, and he cleaned all his knives the right way. And so my daughter today, that was 11 years ago, 10 years ago. Today, she's celebrating her 13th birthday. And so we just want to thank Pong for all his support over the years. And I can imagine if that's your sushi guy, that's your organic beer brewer, or that every other property owner or business owner that's dealing with votes out there in Frederick County is equally compassionate. So
when you make it into downtown Frederick the next time, I will take you to the Lazy Fish so that we can enjoy Pong's incredible skill.
You hear that, Pong? He named the restaurant because he's the head of the Chamber of Commerce and he knows to